about IFRS 17. Opens. Roberta? Yeah?
So, good morning. We have four papers about the amendment to IFRS 17 for this meeting, in addition to the cover note. So agenda paper 2A provides an overview of the comment letters and overall feedback on the exposure draft. We have received 122 comment letters in response to the exposure draft, which was published in June. The majority of the comment letters are from preparers and preparer representative bodies of the insurance and banking industries and from actuaries. All regions are represented in the comment letters, which came from 34 jurisdictions. Appendix A to Agenda Paper 2A provides the overview of the comment letters by type of respondent and by geographical region. Overall, the feedback in the comment letters is consistent with the feedback from outreach that we presented to the board last month. In particular, respondents expressed support for the process the board has followed in considering the concern and the challenges arising in the implementation of IFRS 17 and proposing targeted amendments to the standard. And overall, there is support for the proposal in the exposure draft. However, some respondents think the board should extend the scope of some of the proposed amendments. All acknowledge that the direction of the amendment is generally right, but they think the board should have gone further with the proposed amendment. So Agenda Paper 2B summarizes the feedback on the proposed amendment in response to the 10 questions in the exposure draft. In addition, and consistent with the feedback from outreach, some respondents commented on topics that the board considered when developing the exposure draft, and for which the board decided not to propose changes to IFRS 17, explaining in the basis for conclusions on the exposure draft the rationale for not proposing amendments for these topics. The comments from respondents on those topics are summarized in Agenda Paper 2C. Agenda Paper 2C also explains that some respondents commented on areas of IFRS 17 that the board did not consider when developing the exposure draft, raising new concern and implementation questions that are more detailed and relate to specific transactions and contracts in a small number of jurisdictions, and therefore might not be relevant for a wide group of stakeholders. So with the benefit of all these analyses of the feedback on the exposure draft, at this meeting today, we are asking the board to decide on the redeliberation plan, which is discussed in Agenda Paper 2D. In developing our recommended plan, as highlighted in paragraph 5 of Agenda Paper 2D, we have categorized topics in Agenda Paper 2B and 2C into three groups. So in the first group, we have identified topics for which we think the board can simply confirm the proposed amendments at a future meeting, in the light of the large support for those amendments from outreach and comment letters. In the second group, we have identified the topics we think the board should consider further in the light of the feedback from outreach and comment letters, and from which we have identified points for the board to consider, including additional information about the balance of the cost and benefits of some of the specific requirements in IFRS 17. To be clear, for these topics, we are not necessarily saying that the board needs to modify the proposal in the exposure draft. All we are saying at this point is that we need to do some more analysis before you can decide whether to confirm or otherwise amend the proposal. And in the third group, we have identified the topics which we think the board does not need to consider further. This is either because there was support for the board not proposing amendments, or because the board has already considered the concern and suggestion raised by respondents when developing the exposure draft. And from our analysis of the comment letters, we have not identified any points that the board has not considered in the past. So we think that it is important to decide today which topics the board needs to consider further, and conversely which one it does not need to consider further, as to provide focus for the project over the next few weeks. In addition, and importantly, we think that a timely decision today about the topics that the board should consider further will reduce uncertainty about any possible additional amendment to IFRS 17, and therefore will help to limit disruption to implementation processes that are already well underway. And also to limit disruption to implementation, when considering further the feedback from outreach and comment letters, we think that the board should continue to apply the criteria that the board said when deciding to propose amendment to IFRS 17. So any amendment to IFRS 17 must not change the fundamental principles in the standard, unduly disrupt implementation, or risk further delay the effective date of IFRS 17. For the discussion today, we suggest that we follow the order of the staff recommendation in Agenda Paper 2D, particularly in paragraphs 7, 9, and 10 of Agenda Paper 2D. So starting from paragraph 7 on page 2, the six topics that are listed here are the six proposed amendments in disclosure draft that we recommend the board confirm at a future meeting. We think that the feedback on those six topics, which is summarized in Agenda Paper 2B, provides support for the board to confirm those six proposed amendments without any substantive redeliberation. So the first question for the board, which is on page 6 of Agenda Paper 2D, asks whether you agree that the board can confirm at a future meeting the six proposed amendments for the scope exclusion for some loans, the identification of coverage unit for insurance contract with direct participation features, the presentation of the statement of financial position using portfolios rather than group or contract, the extension of the applicability of the risk mitigation option to situation where an entity uses a reinsurance contract held to mitigate the financial risk of insurance contract with direct participation features, and the proposed transition relief for contract acquired and for the use of the risk mitigation option. So if you agree with the staff recommendation, we plan to present a paper at a future meeting for the board to confirm those proposed amendments without any extensive additional staff analysis for those topics. So I would now hand over to the board for the discussion of this first group of topics. And I think it will help organize the discussion if at this point you focus on identifying any topics in paragraph 7 that you think should not be included in this group. Thank you.
Jean-Lee, I agree with your list. I have some hesitation around the transition relief for the risk mitigation option, not in itself, but because I think we may have benefits. I mean, the risk mitigation option is dealt with in various aspects in various groups, and I think there would be benefit in concluding when we have the full picture.
Nick?
Just some clarification on 7B, which is around the applicability of the risk mitigation options in relation to reinsurance contracts held. And I know there's been some talk about the variable fee approach generally around reinsurance, but is it worth just differentiating between the comments we've had on reinsurance contracts held and those issued? Because I think there is different feedback from stakeholders. It's not all one item lumped together.
Yeah, correct. Actually, we are discussing in the papers the feedback on the two topics separately.
Carol?
I think this is a useful approach that you're taking, because I think not just for us in terms of thinking about the papers that are becoming coming in the future, but I think also because this is a useful signal to people who are still in the implementation process, so they can start with these six topics sort of getting on and working on the assumption that these will be confirmed as they stand. So I understand where you're coming from, Françoise, in saying that when we think about this, we may think about the context of the others. But I think the signalling that this gives, I think, is really important, that even if we do, when we look at the broader picture, think about perhaps what we're saying is that this one is going to be confirmed as is, and I think that's a very useful message.
Can we confirm the staff's recommendation?
14. Okay, so we can move to the second group of topics. This is the list in paragraph 9 on page 3 of agenda paper 2D. These are the topics for which we are recommending the board do some more work and consider further the feedback from respondents. So the second question for the board, which is also on page 6 of agenda paper 2D, ask whether you agree that the board should consider further the feedback from respondents on the proposed amendment in the exposure draft and the areas that the board considered when developing the exposure draft and for which the board decided not to propose changes to IFRS 17 that are listed in paragraph 9. If you agree with the staff recommendation, we plan to present papers to the board at future meetings in the period from December 2019 to February 2020, with more detailed staff analysis and relevant staff recommendation for these topics. So I now hand over to the board for the discussion of this second group of topics, which I said are listed in paragraph 9 of agenda paper 2D. I'm not going to read all of them.
It's a long list.
It's a long list, but of narrow topics. Again, if you can please focus on identifying the topics that are listed in paragraph 9 that you think should not be included in this group, I think that would be helpful for us. So, thank you.
I agree with the list of what we have in paragraph 9, so there isn't any that I'm suggesting that we don't include in the way that the staff has proposed. I guess just a couple of points. When I looked at paper 2B and on this the transition relief for the risk mitigation, 9H, I was struck by the fact that we don't seem to have much in response to what we tried to get people to respond on, which was helping us work out whether we could identify the population. My sense, based on the summary in 2B, was that people said, don't worry about the risk of hindsight. Is that fair?
A lot of respondents, yeah.
Okay. I'd be interested if we can sort of bring out that analysis when we bring it back, just to make sure I understand. Agree with some sense of a heavy heart, but agree based on your analysis with the addition of the items in J, K and L, so the level of aggregation, the business combinations for things acquired in the settlement period and the interim financial statements. But I think it's important that from a signalling perspective we're taking a very targeted look at this, so people shouldn't assume that that means, just to reiterate what you said in your tee up, that we will necessarily do things here. And in particular, that on the level of aggregation, what we're investigating here is a very specific set of contracts in terms of looking, doing a deeper dive. But I agree with the list that you've got here in paragraph 9.
Martin.
I also agree with this because most of items here in paragraph 9 are those where we ask questions and we're getting comments, and therefore I think we have to discuss them. There are some which we don't have asked questions, which is level of aggregation, business combination, interim. But I have read all the comment letters. I think there was quite a concentration of comments from people in these areas. And there is an element of, I would say, new information, little element. And therefore, I think it should be fair if we maybe take some time to discussing this also again, and compared to, I think, what we discussed next, where I don't found a lot of new information, and that's the reason why I think that's the right approach, and I agree with that we should discuss this again.
Chang Wu.
Thank you. I generally agree with your recommendation. However, I have some concern on the issues from level of aggregation to additional specific transition modification reliefs. These topics were not asked, you know, for some suggestion feedback from our stakeholders. So just I'm wondering if we re-deliberate these topics, could you explain whether we needed to re-expose these topics when we decide on some new amendment? So could you give us some idea about the need, necessity of re-exposure of these topics?
I think, Chung, we just raised an important point about some of the topics here, that obviously that when we do consider some new analysis about it in terms of how the board thinks it might consider it, how it proceeds and with these topics, very much has to bear in mind the original criteria that it had when it developed the exposure draft. So that will be still, you know, a key consideration here. So I think we've got the input that we need for the board to consider further, but clearly in thinking about what, if anything, we do with some of these topics, we have to be very mindful that we do not want to disrupt implementation further, and we do not want to cause further delays to the effective date. So that's going to be a consideration and will, I think, be a key parameter for how the staff present the analysis to the board for its subsequent discussion.
So, okay, that's very nice. Another question on this list is that F, proposed effective date of IFRS 17, and the paragraph 13 of agenda paper 2. We are going to deal with all these issues in coming December to February next year, right? So do you have any kind of some plan the when we going to discuss the issue of effective date?
Not really. We don't have such a detailed plan of which topic will come at which board meeting. We are working on the different topics at the same time, but so depending on the level of our work, we will decide that accordingly.
All right, thanks.
Mary?
In terms of the list in paragraph 9, I'm not sure I would have put everyone on that list, but I don't have any objections or suggestions for moving them. I have comments about 3 that I'd just like you to think about as you're doing the work for the papers coming forward. The first is with respect to item C, the proposed amendment for CSM, and I've got to go back to agenda paper 2B on that one, and I think it's paragraph 2024. Paragraph 24, which refers back to paragraph 23B. I mean, the first observation I have is, you know, you've reported that respondents expressed concern that the proposed amendments would not capture economically similar contracts that, in their view, you know, provide the same thing. I think any time that we draw a line, we're going to have things that sit either side of the line that may have different accounting. And so we just have to accept that is a consequence, and maybe challenge ourselves whether we've drawn the line in the right place. But the fact that we're going to have things sitting either side of it do not, to me, make it something that we need to, you know, reconsider. Economically similar things sitting either line don't automatically say we must move it. So I guess a question I had about this, whether you've had any initial thoughts about whether the work that you're doing is more a fundamental reconsideration or perhaps tuning of the words in the description. Do you have initial thoughts? Because all you've really said is you want to consider further some of the comments.
I think it's potentially a bit of both, that we do think we need to think about the wording and the fine-tune the drafting, but there was a lot of feedback about some specific features of contracts that we weren't picking up, and I'm not saying that we haven't done the analysis yet, so I'm not saying we would want to move where we've drawn the line, but there was enough information to make us think that the board should have another look at it. Until we've done the analysis, mm-hmm. I don't know which way we'll go.
My second question is about, in the summary paper 9I, the proposed minor amendments, so that when you go back to paper 2B, it's question 9, and in particular paragraph 75. And I just wanted to express some skepticism about this one. But before I get all righteous about it, let me just check my understanding of what's going on here. I understand that you were, what you've summarized in paragraph A, 75A in paper 2B, is that we identified an inconsistency in the wording between paragraph, you say 101, but I think it's also 102 and B102 and paragraph B107, where B107 refers incorrectly to a group, while paragraph 102 says pretty clearly that it's an individual contract level. Yep. Now, a question of fact here: was this issue ever raised with the TRG as which way do we go on this one to flag the inconsistency? Is this something that came to the TRG?
No, not this point. And we genuinely thought this was just an editorial correction, that we were, you know, putting a drafting issue right. So we were surprised at the level of feedback we've had on this.
Because I guess the skepticism then that I want to report is, if there is a clear inconsistency discussing the same issue between two paragraphs that are five paragraphs apart, and one clearly says contract and the other incorrect, you know, in our view incorrectly says group, for somebody to say, well, we placed all our reliance on the fact that paragraph 107 says group, and we didn't check we didn't feel it necessary to check what, you know, why this wording didn't track paragraph 102, I tend to fall more on the side of saying let's correct the editorial rather than saying, people in good faith placed all their reliance on this if they didn't come back and say, hey, before we move ahead, I see this inconsistency. So warning that I might be a bit of a pain in the neck about that one. And I guess the third one is along the lines of a warning of possible pain in the neck behavior from me on paragraph 9, sorry, back to the summary paper, paragraph 9K, the business combinations, contracts acquired in the settlement phase. I'll be interested to see the further analysis that you're able to do of the additional input we've received. I guess I just want to express skepticism about expanding something that we have discussed only in the context of transition relief to being something that on an ongoing basis would create what seems to me to be a pretty significant disconnect with the concept in IFRS 3 for something that is a core part of the business of an insurance company as opposed to potentially a peripheral issue. But I think I need to see what further analysis you do, but I did just want to put up a warning flag about concerns about going far in this area. So those are observations to think about in developing the papers rather than disagreements that they're appropriately categorized here.
Dale?
Thank you, Hans. Similar to Mary, some of the issues here, maybe looking at the feedback from the respondents, maybe we could go ahead without looking further, but I also do not object to that one. But there is one here that I just want to confirm, is in relation to maybe the, one of the most sensitive, proposed effective date. I mean that when I look at the feedback, almost all respondents supported the board's proposal to defer the effective date of IFRS 17 as proposed in the exposure draft, I believe.
That it be later than 2021.
To defer.
To defer. But to 2022. Because my point is that one of the criteria we are using for including the item here is that it's not going to cause disruption to the process. And of course, changing the date of the adoption of the standards, it will cause. But I, just to confirm that we are including this here in a just-in-case situation, or because actually we are really taking into consideration the possibility of deferring.
I was just going to say, I think it's probably fair to say that almost all supported us not going back to 21. And then there was a mixed view on 22 or whether 22 was enough. And it probably comes to a broader thing, because I think, Hans, when you commented earlier, you said this is quite a long list, and I think that's probably a fair comment. And there are a number of things, like others around the table, there are a number of things here that I would perhaps possibly not have included on this list. But I think, firstly, given the fact that we got a lot of comment letters, we got constructive comment letters, and on at least some of these issues, I would like to better understand at least where the staff is getting to, having looked at all of these issues. And I think effective date is one of those. There are enough... For me, there are probably enough people who said 23 would be something they would want us to look at for us to at least have that discussion. So I wouldn't have seen this as a just in case.
No.
I think this is a proper evaluation of the comment letters that we've received.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. But that said, I'm not sure, as I said, this and other topics, I'm not sure that I have been convinced, but I think it warrants a
discussion. Just saying at this stage, we need to do more for you before you can decide whether to confirm what was in the ED or otherwise amend it. And we asked questions on this and we got a lot of feedback, so we need to give it sufficient consideration.
Okay.
Can I see who can support a staff's recommendation?
14.
Okay. So we can move to the last group of topics, which is on paragraph 10 of Agenda Paper 2D. These are the topics we think the board does not need to consider further after today. As I said earlier, this is either because the summary of the comment letters in Agenda Paper 2C indicates agreement with the board decision not to propose changes to IFRS 17, or because the board has already considered the concern and suggestions reported in Agenda Paper 2C when developing the exposure draft. And for those topics, we have not identified any points that the board has not considered in the past. So if you agree with the staff recommendation, we do not plan any further action on the topics listed in paragraph 10 of Agenda Paper 2D. So I now hand over to the board for the discussion of this last group of topics. Thank you.
In that list, there are a number that I would like to keep open, meaning that I think worthwhile having another discussion. I include in that the scope of the viable fee approach for the reinsurance contracts held and issued, and also the contract boundary of reinsurance, because even though you say we have not been presented with new arguments or new elements, people in their comments in a way counter-argue our basis for conclusions, and our basis for conclusion does not include necessarily all the arguments that shows why they wouldn't at least in some aspects of their arguments, we don't have yet the response to those arguments. And also because these issues relate to basically accounting mismatches, or you would say eventually the perception of accounting mismatches. And I think that's an area where, of course, under the criteria that are set for these amendments, if there is the opportunity and the possibility under our criteria to minimize those, I think it's worth looking at it. For some aspects, you already mentioned that you think the basis for conclusion should be improved, and I really think that there is no better way to improve a basis for conclusion than holding a public discussion. On the classification of contracts acquired in business combination, here I think we are really facing a cost-benefit issue, and our argument, which is a strong argument, is one of consistency in what we do in business combinations. But when we confront costs and benefits, and we note that in the acquirees' financial statements, if they are maintained as such, the same measurements would provide useful information to the users of those financial statements. The question of whether the cost is outweighed by the benefits of the consistency, I think, would be worthwhile discussing. And finally, it's similar to the comment I made earlier on all aspects of relief from transition. I think before we conclude and exclude definitely any of those aspects, I think I would find it beneficial to have the full picture.
Any other comments? Daryl?
So just broadly, I think it's worth first saying, and I sort of started on it earlier, but I think the comment letters we received in this round were really useful, really constructive, and really helpful in helping us think through a lot of the issues. And I think that's helped us a lot in the previous topic in terms of the deliberation staff are going to do. I think, though, that there was also, and perhaps one other point, I think that we were very aware when IFRS 17 was published by the ISB that this was going to involve significant cost in many cases, and perhaps more importantly, was going to involve significant change in business practice for a number of insurance entities, or at the very least, change in reporting practice for a number of insurance entities, so systems that support the reporting. I can see why some of these topics, I can fully understand why some of these topics have been raised and why constituents believe that they wanted to bring them to our attention. But there was very little in any of these topics that I recognized that introduced something that we had not discussed at length at the board level through the various increments that we've gone through in the process, including earlier this year. So I don't see that there is any topic here that I would be inclined to bring back. The reasons differ, and I think it differs quite substantially depending on the particular topic. And it may well be that although we believe that there's costs involved, we still think that there would be significant loss of information if that was not produced. It may be that it would delay implementation processes underway. Each of these has a different rationale for not doing it. And so I'm, to be honest, comfortable with the list that you've drawn up here. I do think there is the opportunity to look at some of the discussions that we had in previous rounds, and if we feel that there's an opportunity to draw from some of those previous discussions, more clearly articulate in the basis if we need to. And I don't think that we get much by having a discussion on a topic that we've already discussed if there's no information that we're going to bring to the table on that topic.
Chang Wu?
Thank you. I generally agree with your recommendation on this one. But yeah, as Daryl said, he's right. You know, most of the issues were already discussed a lot, and there's no new information. However, as Francois said, some of these issues are related to issues in part one and part two, maybe. So based on some kind of a further deliberation, we might need to think about some kind of a re-deliberation of these topics. Some, not all, just some of them, so because they are related to these topics. So that's why generally I agree in principle we do not further discuss on any of the topics here, what in the case of the topics in the second part, if there are some issues related to these issues, then we might need to open some of these issues back to discussing with the topics there in the second part.
I still think, though, I appreciate some of the topics. I mean, one of the topics appears in all three groups, but, you know, Daryl made the point earlier, which I do feel that it's still very helpful at this stage to be clear about what is the central point that we're going to discuss at the future meeting. Mm. And I just think, you know, going back to the points that Roberta made in the tee-up, it's helpful for us to be focused on exactly what we're looking at, and secondly, also to provide some greater clarity to our stakeholders about what is the area that we're looking at so that we're not disrupting implementation. So I still think it's quite important to sort of try and...
And can I just confirm that? I mean, just to Chung Wu's point, nothing in the vote you're asking us to take here would preclude staff if you were dealing with 9D and you realised that it had a knock-on impact,
yeah, of course,
bringing
yes.
that knock-on
exactly.
impact to our attention.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, Martin?
Yeah, I want also to agree with Daryl, because in this, what we have in paragraph 10, when we have discussed it, when we developed the standards, then we were open in our implementation support, we listened to THG, we listened to other staff, and we discussed it again. Now we have not asked for additional comments, but some people have provided comments, and I don't see any reason why we should discuss it again. When it's clearly that some people dislike what we have decided, but there is no new information why they dislike, because we have discussed it already. We have discussed the rationale, and we have made a decision twice that I think we think, okay, we have made the right decision, and I don't see any need why we should discuss it again. And I think also that will really disrupt implementation if we're discussing stuff again, which we think, okay, we don't have any chance to get kind of to a different decision. And that is why I strongly think, okay, we should not discussing that stuff again. But clearly, if something happens and new information come up, we always can do discussing stuff again. Final
okay.
decision.
So who supports the staff's recommendation to not go further down the alphabet in the list of things to do?
13.
Okay. We get late, but made up. Because this is a smooth project. Thank you very much.
Thank you.